Decentraland Podcast with David Amoyala.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you for joining us for the first episode of the week, the first episode of the international break of the Calcio Land podcast. So today, since it's Monday, we have our winners and losers from the weekend in Serie A. We have a slate of Twitter questions from our listeners, and we are going to close on Roma with our dear friend, essentially a co-host of the program with us, John Solano. So that should be a good way to end the show, since there's a lot going on at Roma. But before we get to that, I am joined by our co-host, producer, Chelsea influencer, Alex Goldberg. And Alex, we have to start with the derby. So I'm going to ask you very simply, what were some of your main takeaways from what you saw yesterday?
Well, first of all, what a derby. It really was very exciting. I think right off the bat, one of my main takeaways is Milan is not fully there yet. Fully there yet, meaning they've been unbelievable as of late. And I think what we've seen from Milan has been true. It's been genuine. They really have progressed. They really have found a continuity, a chemistry. However, Rome wasn't built in a day, and it's not like they can just win all of these games. And I think conversely, another thing we learned is, okay, well, Inter still has a damn good squad. Even if you take Icardi out, there's a reason why we picked Inter. Many people picked Inter to be second in Serie A. They're not exactly a throwaway team, and there's still some damn good players in that team, once again, even without Icardi. So the other takeaway that has to do less with each specific team and both teams in general in Serie A is, it's damn good for Serie A. I mean, that is a damn good game for Serie A. Now, first of all, we know the better Inter and Milan are, the better it is for Serie A and football in general. But when we get a derby like that, it really is a great product for a neutral to watch. It's a great product for a Serie A neutral specifically, but even a Milan and an Inter fan respectively. So it really was a thrilling game, and it was obviously a thrilling outcome for Inter. But I don't think Milan can hang their heads too low on that one. They definitely fought. They fought back. They showed fight. And I think that's definitely meaningful. I know they came away with no points, but they're still in a pretty good position on the table to get Champions League football for next year. And they should feel proud of themselves for fighting back, because at this point, with all of these new players and kind of this new feeling with this current team, it really just doesn't feel like they've ever been embarrassed ever since they've started making changes. And they weren't embarrassed yesterday, but huge credit to Inter. They needed that and they got that, and they still have a lot of quality. So I would say neither team should feel negative, even Milan, who lost. So, David, that's my takeaway. What's yours?
So, yeah, I'm with you. To me, this was a perfect ending to a really great weekend in Serie A as a whole before the international break. I think it's really a nice way to end this section of the season. We had 43 goals in Serie A this weekend. I thought the game between Sassuolo and Sampdoria, which we'll talk about at winners and losers, was outstanding. We had Genoa defeating Juve, handing Juve the first loss of the season. We had an exciting match between Napoli and Udinese. We had Lazio having an impressive victory, and they've getting back in the mix for a spot in the Champions League. But the way the derby wrapped up the weekend was really perfect. That was really, really exciting. My main takeaway was that I feel vindicated. I'm completely against the idea of demolishing San Siro and starting a new stadium for both teams. I mean, that place was electric. Milan was technically the home team. You would have barely known that. I know Inter got the early goal, just a great, great atmosphere. I think, too, what was really interesting about this match is this is a perfect prisoner of the moment syndrome, if you really wanted to make some big takeaways from the match. Because from my perspective, Gattuso has been getting a lot more out of his own squad than he has Inter. I think Inter, as you mentioned, even without Icardi, they're a very talented team. I think Gattuso's been in a lot of ways making miracles with Milan. We've talked about it at length, but it's hard to deny the fact that Spalletti and these derbies, both times this year, this is the first time Inter has won both derbies since 2011-12. Spalletti took his lunch money in both matches. I think the tactical adjustments that he made, having two midfielders in front of the defense, Vicino kind of playing an odd role that Gattuso couldn't figure out. You have to hand it to Spalletti. He does have this up his sleeve tactically. You can maybe question a lot of the other things that he does. But he was a big winner there. But for me, really, the winner was San Siro and a great weekend in Serie A ending on that note. I know there was a lot of attention in the derby, a lot of people tuning in also because of the time of the day. And that was really a great advertisement for Serie A as a whole. So that's that winner.
All right, so that was a fantastic derby. Well said on your part. So, David, always on Monday, though, there are more winners and losers to talk about than just that game. So, without further ado, who are our winners and losers of episode 204 of the Calciolan podcast?
So, it actually worked out the order of the games. There was quite a few in the race to avoid relegation, which I have to say is really exciting this season in Serie A. So we had Cagliari. They were kind of already out of this race to avoid relegation, and I think they cemented this with their win against Fiorentina. This was actually a really good week last week for Cagliari because they beat Fiorentina. They also had three players selected to the national team, goalkeeper Cragno, midfielder Barella, and striker Pavoletti. So for a team in that state of the table in Serie A, that's really impressive. In addition to that, we had João Pedro. It was the man of the match. He's a very underrated midfielder. Barella rightfully gets all the hype, but João Pedro is a very nice player as well. We had Chiesa with a great goal, and I think Chiesa brings a lot of good momentum to this international break. He's been really good at the beginning of the year. I thought before, towards the end of 2018, he tailed off, but he's going into the international break with a lot of momentum. Spal really needed a victory, and the fact that they brought back Lazzari, who was out for a month, you could really see what an impact he had. So big win for them. Lazzari, I would say, one of the best players involved in the race to avoid relegation. I know there was some talk, I got some tweets, why wasn't he selected over, say, Florenzi on the Italian national team? I think Mancini did the right thing since he just came back from an injury not to select him. Spal really needs him. They have a lot at stake. So I think that decision made sense. And another big winner is Sinisa Mihailovic, who goes to Torino. His former team puts up three goals against Torino, which had one of the best defenses in Serie A going into that match. So big win for him, two in a row for Bologna. And what a performance by Palacio. Had three assists in this match. One of the journalists that I really like that I follow from Gazzetta dello Sport on Twitter mentioned, you know, how many players would Palacio start over at Inter right now? I know the derby was really great, but a lot of them been really uninspired. And Palacio still playing with a lot of drive. So big win for Bologna. We also had Empoli, who brought back their manager from the beginning of the season, Andrea Zoli, and got rid of Iacchini. Andrea Zoli is more out of the Empoli school, so Sarri, Giampaolo, and he rewarded the club for bringing him back with a big win against Frosinone 2-1. And then for me, other than the derby, the absolute match of the week, that Sassuolo-Sampdoria match was really tremendous. Anyone who still calls Serie A boring and defensive, that would really be the match that I would show because, you know, Sassuolo's a team, you know, barely trying to avoid relegation, kind of mid-table, Sampdoria upper mid-table, and both really play offensive style football. I really love both managers, definitely not Catenaccio defensive type managers. Giampaolo came from Empoli, kind of a Sarri type clone, De Zerbi. Loves Barcelona, the Pep Guardiola style, and also that helped Boateng go to Barcelona because he played in that system. That was really something else. Eight goals, great match. If you haven't watched them, you have ESPN Plus, and you need a dose of calcio during the international break, I would recommend checking that out. In that match, we had Quagliarella scored another goal. He increased his lead in the race for Capocannoniere, leading goal scorer in Serie A. Now is up to 21 goals and has a two-goal lead. Also, a very strong match by Linetti, who I think is one of the most underrated midfielders in Serie A, had a goal and assist, and really showed why calcio hipsters really rate him highly. And then we had Genoa, who defeated Juve. I did get a question kind of on a conspiracy theory. If part of the package for Juve getting Perin on the cheap and getting a huge return on Sturaro was Juve giving Genoa the victory. And Genoa has actually collected 4 out of 6 points against Juve this season. So we had Kwame player that I've liked for a long time, put in a great performance, really devastating on the counterattack. I actually think Milan should consider bringing him in because he played really well with Piontek. And then we had former Juve player Sturaro with a goal where you're like, man, I haven't seen those feet and class like that from Sturaro at Juve. And we had Pandev, who likes Sturaro off the bench, scored. He's a Juve killer. I think I've read he's had 6 or maybe even 8 goals against Juve in his career. And I thought defender Romero, who seems very likely will be joining Juve in the summer, had a very solid performance on defense. So great win for Genoa there. And then we had Lazio with a very impressive 4-1 win against Parma. We had Luis Alberto with a brace. And Milinkovic-Savic didn't score, but had a really strong performance. So I'm going to name Milinkovic-Savic as a winner. You guys know that I'm partial for him, but I killed him in the first half of the season. I had him in the loser segment many times, but he's been really excellent in 2019. I know how narratives work, and a lot of people are now chalking it up. One season wonder, and he sucked. And look, in the first half of the season, no doubt about it. But in 2019, he's been really, really excellent. So strong performance there. And then we have to hand some more winners from the derby. So we mentioned Vecino, who seems to score in huge matches. We had De Vrij and Skriniar, who I thought were really excellent. Inter's defense has struggled a little bit in recent weeks. They were going against a red-hot Piontek, and I thought both of them were really, really excellent. We mentioned Spalletti, won both derbies this season, first time since 2011-12. Now, I still think more likely than not, Conte is going to replace him at the end of the season. But Spalletti did show his tactical acumen there. And we want to mention one winner for Milan, and this is Bakayoko. There's a story on Sky Sport today in Italy that Bakayoko had predicted, guaranteed that he was going to score in the derby and pulled through. He's really become an idol for Milan fans. Good for him. He's really, Gattuso deserves a lot of credit for turning him around, but he's the one that goes on the pitch and did well. Flip side, the losers. We had Roma with a really, really bad loss. The defense is completely in shambles. It was even before the Manolas injury, but they really look weak at the back. You know, you'll hear more on Roma at our interview with John Solano. And then we had Fiorentina with a very uninspired performance against Cagliari. Now, there's a lot of talk that Pioli won't come back next season. I mentioned Torino earlier. They give up 3 home goals to Bologna, who were also without one of their main strikers, Santander. And it was really a tough loss because Torino was really on a great roll. Bologna was the third team in a row that they met from the race to avoid relegation. A win could have really set them up nicely for a Europa League spot. It just goes to show, even when everything trends and everything looks to make sense, that's football for you. And then we had Atalanta with another disappointing home result, and this was against Chievo. Chievo deserves credit for playing with a lot of pride since they're already essentially relegated. But Atalanta, there is this myth that they are a great home team, and that was in the past, but not so much this season. They've actually collected more points on away matches. Juve's defense, it really goes to show without Chiellini what a mess it is. Bonucci and Rugani really struggled. I know I've piled on Rugani. I thought Bonucci was more at fault in this match. But Rugani too. I mean, if you're someone who thinks Rugani should be a long-term starter for Juve, if your answer is like, well, he struggles when Chiellini isn't there, well, Chiellini's 35. This is exactly what you need Rugani for. And then Napoli's doctor, what happened with Ospina, who had a concussion, incredibly frightening. At least the story has a happy ending. But Ospina got injured at the beginning of the match. He stayed in. He looked really wobbly even on the 2 goals. And then he collapsed on the pitch. It was frightening, was taken to the hospital. But the good news, I saw Ospina's wife today tweeted that he's doing well and he's back at home. So we send our best wishes to him. And then, look, you know, I've been very complimentary of Gattuso. I'm very impressed for him. Be prisoner of the moment. But it is fair that in the derbies, both times Spalletti stole his lunch money. Milan hasn't, as a whole, hasn't won a derby since January of 2016. That's a long time now. So I still have faith on Gattuso. I think, you know, overall, he's done better, considerably better than Spalletti this season. But in this match, That definitely wasn't his best performance. But something that always is a great performance are the Twitter questions from our listeners. It's in your national break, so please keep the questions coming. You have questions on Serie A, the Italian national team, transfers. I know this is the weeks where we have a lot of crazy stuff on the international break. On my checklist, I already wrote it out on Twitter. We're definitely going to get a lot of quotes from Hazard, ambiguous on Real Madrid. We're going to get a Raiola interview. We are going to get some stories on how close Messi and Ronaldo were to joining Club X back in the day. And we're going to get plenty of transfer rumors. So if you have questions on those, send them our way. We'll also, of course, take them on pop culture, journalism, and all that good stuff. But which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
David, you're spot on. There's nothing like headlines during the international break. And by the way, we've already had an Hazard report about Real Madrid and Chelsea. So we're off to a great start. All right, let's start with the first Twitter question. David, do you think Juve's loss against Genoa will impact Juve's form in the Champions League?
Absolutely not. And come on, guys. I saw some Juve fans really upset over this match. I mean, Allegri finally does exactly what you want him to do, like rotate a lot of players, really prioritize the Champions League. This match, you kind of could see it happening. Both Thousand and I had picked this as a draw, but I should have kind of really seen this coming, that Juve was going to be really uninspired. So no, I don't think it'll have any impact for Juve in the Champions League. I don't think it'll have any impact in Serie A. They have a huge lead. I think Allegri deciding not to even select Ronaldo and bring him to the match. And I know there were a lot of upset fans that spend money on the tickets, and I can respect that. We see that a lot in the U.S. with the NBA. Now this happened with Calcio too, but absolutely not. But come on, Juve fans, even people that observe, you know, Juve from far away. I get it, they lost their unbeaten streak, but now they're really prioritizing the Champions League, so good for them. I think the only thing that you can fault Allegri for is consistently starting Mandzukic, who really looks like he needs a break, and maybe definitely Kane should have played. But, you know, I don't think this will have any impact whatsoever on Juve long term.
You know, when I hear Juventus fans complain about something like this, it really does remind me of New England Patriots fans when they complain when they've completely destroyed the rest of the league. They're going to the playoffs and they complain that they only played Tom Brady for a half. I mean, just ridiculous kind of standards and problems. And if there was a game Juve was going to lose, it was this one. It was obviously this one. All right, David, next Twitter question. Where do you think Eusebio Di Francesco ends up next season?
So I think almost certainly, well, not almost certainly, I think the most likely is that he goes to replace the two up-and-coming coaches who I think are ready to maybe head to Roma or a top club. And these are Giampaolo and Gasperini. I think Di Francesco fits perfectly at either Sampdoria or Atalanta for style of play. I think that's really his sweet spot as far as the team he should manage. Basically across, somewhere in between Roma and Sassuolo. I'd really like to see him there. I also could see him replacing Pioli at Fiorentina. So another team kind of in that sweet spot. But, you know, obviously Pioli isn't going to be a candidate for Roma. So I could see him essentially replacing the guy who will be his long-term replacement at Roma, if I had to guess. Because I think Roma should definitely go for either Giampaolo or Gasperini.
All right, how about this? Have Inter gotten a fair return on their investments over the past 28 years?
So I'm assuming you've seen it, Alex, and probably a lot of our listeners, this tweet out there with like the net spend, like not even net spend, like the expenditures that clubs had since like the early 90s. And it's really cool. It's a graph that constantly changes after a season. You go up and down, and it's really remarkable how much Inter spent. And look, you know, did they get a return on investment as far as number of trophies and all? Definitely not. I mean, I know they have the treble, and that's something that if you're an Inter fan, I would definitely put up with the years that they struggle afterwards for the treble in a lot of ways. You know, they put all that money on the credit card and then had to pay it back for a while. But overall, they didn't get the results. Now, they also did get a lot of huge name players. I mean, you know, over the years, you know, they've gotten Bergkamp, the original Ronaldo, Ibrahimovic, Vieira, like they've had a lot of huge names. So result wise, no, but I think prestige signings. And I always say never underestimate Inter on the transfer market, because a lot of players want to live in Milan, and Inter, you know, have great connections to agents and whatnot. I think their president, who did the lion's share of that spending, Massimo Moratti, like really ran that team like a fan would. So the fan of a team or someone running a fantasy team. So, you know, he put his money where his heart was, even more than his mouth. So that graphic was really interesting. If you missed it, I retweeted it. Definitely some fascinating stuff, because you also really see the rise of the Premier League and the shift from Serie A. I mean, you also saw a team like Lazio, how much they used to spend back in the day. So definitely some interesting stuff. So, Alex, here's a question for you. So we had the draw in the Europa League, and we had one listener who already asked us to do a matchup, Chelsea-Napoli starting 11. We're going to wait a little bit for that. I know you don't want to jinx Chelsea, and I really want Napoli to win the Europa League. So let's take it one step at a time. What was your gut reaction when you saw that Napoli drew Arsenal? And if you had to give them a percentage for qualifying, what would it be?
All right. So gut reaction, I mean, selfishly, I was just happy that Chelsea didn't draw Arsenal or Napoli. But gut reaction for Napoli, I wasn't too worried for Napoli. Really not. And now that's not to completely demean Arsenal, because Arsenal, obviously, we're good enough to advance in the Europa. There was a little bit of doubt if they would, but they had a really good second leg at home, winning 3-0, which then advanced them. But you got to remember, Arsenal right now are fighting tooth and nail in the Premier League for a Champions League spot. And they might not be as unstable as Chelsea are, where all of a sudden things look good and then bad and then good and then bad. However, they don't have a great grasp on who they are yet as a team. Now, I think Unai Emery is a good manager, and I definitely think that if Arsenal are clicking, and that's just kind of a cheap thing to say, if any team's clicking, they're dangerous. But if they are clicking attacking-wise, they got some very potent players. I mean, Lacazette, when he's in form, is very, very good, as is Aubameyang if he's actually not missing sitters. Mesut Ozil's got a lot of talent. However, I kind of trust the structure of Napoli a lot more. I know that Ancelotti and Emery are new managers to their team this year, but I just feel like there's a little bit more of a foundation, a little bit more of a chemistry within Napoli, a little bit more cohesiveness, and a lot more unknowns with Arsenal. Now, they have two midfielders, Arsenal, that have really been bright spots this year. Lucas Torreira, who all Serie A fans know from obviously his time at Sampdoria, he's been good. And they have a really good young player, Guendouzi. But still, like I said, that's not much of a structure that's been together for a while. So Arsenal, it's kind of a crapshoot. And I do think Napoli is the favorite in that matchup. And you asked me percentage to move on. I would say Napoli are 60% to move on. Arsenal are 40%. So that's my opinion. I think Napoli are the favorite in that tie. And I think, once again, just to stress it, a lot of that might also be dependent on the fact that Napoli are a little bit comfier in their Champions League position for next year than Arsenal are. So, David, next Twitter question. Why weren't Murray and Calabria selected to the Italian national team?
Yeah, so it's kind of a, you know how there's a checklist for the international break? Like, there's also a checklist when selections for the Italian national team, or I guess any national team for someone covering the league like I do. It's kind of like a checklist on why some players aren't selected. So, performance-wise, Mire has been a lot better than Mattia Perin. Perin hasn't played that often for Juve, and when he has, hasn't been that good. And I think this is the first time he's been selected for a while. And I think Calabria, it's definitely compared to Florenzi, has been really, really much better, arguably maybe the best right back in Serie A, or definitely up there in Serie A this season. But the reason they weren't selected is because they're part of the under 21 team. And, you know, and I know you could make the counter argument why Zaniolo, on the other hand, is on the senior team. But Zaniolo has really kind of been Mancini's bet, in a way. Mancini, by selecting him even before he had played for Roma, launched them. But that's a pretty fair point. But Italy, the under 21, the Euro is going to take place in Italy this summer. They have a lot at stake with the under 21 team. It's a pretty good group of players. So I think Mere and Calabria are kind of cornerstones of that team. So that's why they weren't selected. So when you have to make a checklist of, you know, why weren't certain players selected, always look at the injuries. Who just came back from an injury? Who just got hurt? Insigne just got hurt. Lazzari just came back from an injury. And the other one is always look at the under 21 and see what the under 21 has upcoming.
All right, next question. Trapattoni turned 80. Where does he rank amongst Italian managers of your lifetime?
So great question. You know, I specify of my lifetime of those that I saw. And I have to say, you know, it was really kind of shocking to see that he turned 80. I mean, that's really like a ripe old age. You know, when I really started following calcio closely was like the mid 80s. And Trapattoni was the coach at Juve when they won the champions. I mean, Trapattoni is such an old school manager that when he was at Juve, Juve was known for their European DNA. So that's how long ago that was. So he's someone that, you know, won every European competition as both a player and a manager. Really, really impressive. So won Juve's first Champions League. He also won abroad in Germany, Portugal, and Austria. You know, I think you can make a really great case that, you know, the only thing really missing from Trapattoni's resume is the World Cup with Italy. And if you go back to 2002, when he had Italy's team in Korea, we know, you know, I'm not a big ref conspiracy guy, but if there ever was one, it would be then. I mean, that team in 2002 was loaded. I think, you know, there are a lot of people that think the 2002 team was even better than the 2006 one. And now a few people have pointed out that even before they were eliminated, it's not like that team was hitting on all cylinders. But he really was robbed of an opportunity of really going down as maybe not just the Italian best Italian manager, period, but really up there in the best in the world. So, you know, when I think of my lifetime, you know, he's up there with Lippi and Sacchi for very different reasons. You know, Sacchi, definitely the best club team manager with such a distinct style. But Sacchi, other than at Milan, did struggle. He did well with the Italian national team. They lost on penalty kicks in the World Cup in 94. Wasn't the most inspired Italy team, but still came really close to winning it. At other clubs, he struggled, but Sacchi's definitely up there. And Lippi, look, he has a Champions League at Juve. He has a World Cup. Now, he has the blemish of coming back in 2010 in South Africa, but I don't feel like a lot of people are actually going to remember that. So he's right there. And, you know, what's really interesting about Trapattoni is, you know, he was a great Milan player, played for Nereo Rocco, who was the godfather of Catenaccio. And, you know, he definitely incorporated a lot of what Nereo Rocco did, but he also did very well with some offensive players. So great career, great manager, an absolutely fantastic guy. I think it's lovely that he's on social media now, too. He's having a lot of fun with that. Just a great guy. If you know Italian and you want some good laughs, like look at some of his old videos. Some of his quotes are fantastic. Just really a great ambassador for calcio and definitely one of the elite managers of my lifetime, for sure.
All right. How about this, David? How different would Berardi's career look had he joined Juventus 3 or 4 years ago?
So I think there's a lot of ex-girlfriend or, you know, spite of you didn't want to date me in high school and look at how I turned out and look at how poorly your life turned out when it comes to Juve fans with Berardi. And look, you know, even against Sampdoria, not really that inspiring overall. You know, his career has definitely taken a turn for the worse. But I really don't think that had he gone to Juve, it would have been any better. As a matter of fact, I think there's a good chance it could have potentially even been worse. He's just a really odd character. I think Di Francesco said it best. You know, he's a shy, peculiar guy, can't really handle the pressure. I mean, I used to think that maybe his career arc was going to be Di Natale. Now he's not even going to be nearly as good as Di Natale as long as he doesn't get back on track. So I think he needs a move away from Sassuolo, but I definitely don't think he needs to be at a huge club. I think him going to Roma and be reunited with Di Francesco would have been a disaster with the pressure there. I don't think he'd strive at a team like Juve, Milan, Napoli, or Inter. But I would like to see him wherever Di Francesco goes next. So say it's Sampdoria, Fiorentina, or Atalanta. I wouldn't mind seeing him there. That, I think, would be the sweet spot with a manager that can get the best out of him and maybe not too much pressure. So that's where I'd like to see him. But I definitely don't think his career took a turn for the worse because he turned down Juve.
All right, David, last Twitter question, and I think this is a brilliant Twitter question. Which actor or musician's career arc most resembles Antonio Cassano's?
So I have to say I've been really enjoying Antonio Cassano reinventing himself as a TV analyst. And for those of you in Italy or those of you who watch the show Tiki Taka, he's been on a lot with Wanda Nara, Icardi's agent. And I got to give her credit for showing up on the show because they're basically just torching her on there. We had Cassano for multiple weeks. Yesterday, we even had Bobo Vieri joining in the fun. So it's kind of like that TV, kind of almost like an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, where there's some cringe-worthy moments, but still really entertaining. So I've been thinking a lot about Cassano because of that. And I have to say, him reinventing himself as someone who lectures others on how to be a good teammate and how not to destabilize a locker room is absolutely fantastic. The other thing too is I've been rewatching the Doors movie ever since Bohemian Rhapsody. I'm really into like musical biographies and thinking about which bands or artists should have their movie. And I rewatched the Doors movie. So for me, Val Kilmer definitely is the Antonio Cassano of actors or even musicians. And I'll say this because just like Cassano, incredibly talented. And to give you a frame of reference, Totti in his book said that Cassano is the best teammate talent-wise he ever had. And, you know, you can like the Doors movie or not. Like most Oliver Stone movies, it's pretty, you know, there's a wide range of opinions. But he's really great as Jim Morrison. He sings the songs. He really got into that role so much. He actually needed psychiatric help to kind of get out of that wormhole. And then Val Kilmer continued his streak. He was in Tombstone, one of the best Westerns ever. He could have easily won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor there. And then he was in Heat playing De Niro's right-hand man and his crew. Really outstanding in that movie. I think like almost everyone else, you know, after that Heat movie, I really thought Val Kilmer was on his way to becoming the biggest actor in the world, kind of like Cassano going to Real Madrid. And instead, it really did not work out. It took a turn for the worse. Val Kilmer's equivalent of Real Madrid was the Island of Dr. Moreau movie, which he did with Marlon Brando, which was an unmitigated disaster. So that's my comp. I'm curious to hear if our listeners have any others. This is the international break, so we'll do a little more pop culture questions, but don't worry, we'll still do a bunch of episodes. Before I turn it over to our interview with John Solano, just very quickly, Alex and I are going to be rolling out some new enhancements for Calcioland. We've been doing this show for almost 2 years. For those of you that have been following in this incarnation, pretty much nothing changes. You'll still get 2 episodes a week for free. I really believe in this product, not really what I do, but the format of the show, the questions of our listeners, our guests. I still want it to be available to potentially new audience members, but we are looking to give some enhanced content that will be subscription. We are going to do some fun things. We want to bring you really good value. This will also help me. I've been doing my taxes, and you know, as much as I love doing the show, I've been pumping in a lot into it. So I think we want to, you know, help with that, but also really enhance your experience with Calcioland. So I'm going to turn it over to our interview with John Solano. Please keep in mind, as we started recording today's episode, we had the quotes from Pallotta responding to Monchi's press conference. We'll address that on Thursday, and I recorded with John before the derby. So we talk a little bit about the Champions League implications for Roma, but that was done before the derby. So thanks for tuning in today, guys. And for the interview part of the segment, we're going to circle back with Roma, a club that in good and bad always gives us a lot of opportunities for content. And our next guest really doesn't need introduction if you've been listening to Calcioland for a while. We have our dear friend, John Solano. You guys know him, of course, as the editor of the excellent IS Roma press site, which he also has a podcast for. He's also the host of another excellent podcast, Serie A Show, with our friends Nima Tavalli and Chloe Beresford. And he also writes about Serie A and Roma specifically on Euro Fantasy Games. So, John, it's a real pleasure to chat with you. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Absolutely. Happy to be back.
Okay, so just a brief note. We are recording this on Sunday. This is after Roma's loss to Spal, but before the derby between Milan and Inter, which has some implications for the Champions League. So keep that in mind. So let's start with that subject, John. Yesterday's loss against Spal was really pretty painful for Roma. So I want to ask you, how much of an impact do you think this is going to have on their chances of qualifying for the next Champions League?
Yeah, very, very painful. That's probably the best summation for it. I unfortunately think it's going to have a pretty tremendous impact just because Roma, they still have to play Napoli. They still have to play Inter. So those are two difficult matches. And I think Roma, being a club that this season has played so poor, they needed every single point where they could get it. And knowing that one of Milan, Inter is going to drop points, this was the opportunity of a lifetime. Given how bad the season has been for them, I thought had they beaten Spal and they had gotten the 3 points, they would have made up a tremendous amount of ground. They could, if Milan wins, they could have leapfrogged Inter. So it cannot be understated how much of a missed opportunity it was. And initially I thought, you know, this is probably the end of any Champions League aspirations that they may have, because there's certain moments where it just feels like this is hopeless. This is, it's sort of like you're just spinning your wheels and you're not really going anywhere. And that's, unfortunately, that's what this Roma feels like. Just a very, very poor team overall. You could point to every facet of them and they're lacking in something. So I feel like yesterday almost was sort of like the metaphor for the end of their campaign, because it just seems very unlikely that they can bring it all together.
So Ranieri, at the end of yesterday's match, you know, essentially said that there's one plan for Roma if they qualify for the Champions League. And if they don't, there's going to be some serious repercussions with some players coming and going. And I promise we're going to end the podcast on a positive note on Roma, but let's talk more about the more potential negative impacts. So you're very familiar with Roma's financial situation. I know after they were eliminated with Porto, my first reaction was like, yeah, okay, it sucks that they were eliminated, but if this helps, you know, them focusing just on Serie A, that's much more important because of the CL revenue. So give our listeners a sense of how important this is for Roma.
Yeah, so making the Champions League for Roma is vitally, vitally, vitally important. There's a lot of outlets you can look at. Deloitte is one of them who does a pretty good overview of what the financial situation of Roma looks like. But commercially, as you know, David, Roma do very, very poor as opposed to the Milan-based sides. And obviously, compared to Juve, I mean, Roma are just nowhere close. So that guaranteed revenue that the Champions League brings in for them is critically, critically, critically important. Now, they're no longer in the crosshairs of financial fair play. That's a good thing. In previous seasons, they've had to break even. But now they're essentially going to have this big hole of revenue missing. So in previous seasons, what we've seen is obviously Roma, they'll sell a big player or two. But they still reinvest actually pretty well in the market. And I think this summer is going – granted, you mentioned that there's still a chance. I feel like I'm being very doom and gloom, but just the feeling at the moment, it doesn't feel like they're going to make the Champions League. So should they not qualify for the Champions League, they're going to have, now it's difficult to place an actual number on it because there's a lot of factors. We don't know what they're looking financially for this semester. They had their latest financial statement come out in December and it was extremely positive. They turned a profit. Now, we're not going to know what their final earnings from the Champions League are from this season until Juve either win or get eliminated, because there's obviously the market pool from Italy. The more matches Juve play in the Champions League, the more money they're going to earn from that market pool that all the Italian teams share from the Champions League. So as long as Juve continues on in the competition, Roma are essentially going to earn less. So between what they earned in the group stage, what they earned by making it to the knockouts, Roma are going to have a pretty big hole. I mean, just to start off, it's going to be 50 million euros right off the bat. And that number could grow. So it's pretty clear that they're going to have to make that up in some fashion. And I can't think of any other way other than their usual, the selling spree that we'll see in the summer. Because I think Roma are going to lose some big names. It's difficult to choose who it would be, but Manolas is certainly a candidate. Under, I think, would certainly be a potential name that could go away. And there's a couple others. It's difficult to point at exactly which players will leave, but again, if they don't qualify for the Champions League, there is no denying that they will have to drastically alter their summer plans relative to what we've seen in previous seasons. And, you know, a lot of people joke, particularly Roma supporters, about some of the players they've had to sell in previous summers. They're going to be in for a rude awakening this summer, I think, if Roma don't qualify.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I would imagine, you know, it also comes down to, you know, the plusvalenza, who's on the books for what, where you can turn a profit and shedding big salaries. So, yeah, I'm with you. But I know you're doom and gloom, and this is right after the loss against Spal, but it's not like Inter are exactly the model of stability either. Sure. So there is still some hope there. Sure. So let me ask you about Ranieri, because I've been reading a lot of your coverage. And by the way, fantastic work over the whole Di Francesco, Monchi. Really, really well done there. So it feels though now with both of them gone and Roma, you know, having such a poor match, you no longer have them to blame anymore. And and I think you put it really well, the blame has to be on the players. But I think there have been some, maybe more on the human aspect, some interesting things about Ranieri's appointment. But what have been your favorite things that have happened since he arrived?
Yeah, well, the main thing is, I thought from the second he arrived, it won't even matter what he does tactically. I mean, this season we've seen Roma play. They didn't field the same formation at any point this entire season. So Di Francesco had a new starting 11 in every single match up until he left, which I didn't believe it, but I had to go back and look at it. But that was actually the case, which to me is absolutely crazy. I don't even know how that's possible. Just, you know, you would think just by mistake that would not be the case. But yeah, Ranieri is an extremely likable figure, very, very likable. He's a Roma supporter. He loves the club. And he came knowing full well that he would not be appointed beyond June. Now there's a chance that he could remain at the club in more of a technical director aspect. I don't know if he would actually do that, but I think the thing that he brings is enthusiasm, which is what the environment, which is what the team needs more than anything. Because again, I don't even think this is about tactics. I think this is about man management. I think Di Francesco was one of the worst man managers I've ever seen. Now, obviously, they lost to Spal, but last week they beat Empoli in a much needed victory. And just the approach that Ranieri takes in front of the media and in public versus what Di Francesco took is very, very different. One of the names I immediately think of is Schick. In a Coppa Italia match earlier this season, Schick had 2 goals and assists. And Di Francesco, after the match, sort of lambasted him. He said he has to do more. I was pleased with his performance, but it still wasn't good enough. And then Ranieri comes in, and he's just praising Schick. He's saying, listen, he was brought in for a lot of money. He was under a lot of pressure. We have to believe in him, but the talent is there. And it's his first match back from injury. Ranieri throws him into the starting 11, and he scores. And I think just little things like that will matter infinitely more than what he's able to do tactics-wise. Because this Roma, I still maintain that in terms of just quality, on paper, I still think they're good enough for the top four. But the manner in which they've performed this season has been horrific. And Di Francesco has not been able, or was not able, to sort of pull these guys above their level. He wasn't able to drag guys out of slumps. So I think Ranieri, just from a man management standpoint, will bring a lot. So there's at least the hope from the sense that with him at the helm, Roma will at least have the motivation to sort of spurn on and fight for that final Champions League place. Now, whether or not they actually attain it remains to be seen. But at least with Ranieri, he brings a shred of hope where had Di Francesco remained, I don't think there would have been any hope whatsoever.
So now let's talk about Monchi, who today returned to his former club. And I think for Arsenal, that's a bullet dodge and the best outcome for him as well. But let's talk about him a little bit. I think I'm with you talent-wise. Roma has what it takes to be in top four. I think the problem really is that defense, when especially with Bonaldo's hurt. When I look at all the teams in contentions, Roma's defense is the weakest area. But let's talk about how Roma could hypothetically replace Monchi. There's been a lot of talk about bringing in someone from the outside or going in with an internal solution. So, A, let me ask you, what do you think would happen and what would you like to see happen? Which for someone that's really plugged in with reporting like you are, might not necessarily be the same thing.
Yeah, it's very difficult because I feel like there's almost two scenarios. If they make the Champions League and if they don't make the Champions League, I feel like if they make the Champions League, they could perhaps be a bit riskier in their appointment, maybe hire somebody sort of like Monchi, somebody known for unearthing talent. Whereas if they don't make the Champions League, I feel like they have to go with more of a proven quantity, somebody like Sabatini. And he's the one who I think will ultimately return and be appointed. And frankly, I would like to see him reappointed. The biggest issue is if he's able to resolve his personal issues with Roma president James Palotta. They did not see eye to eye on a lot of things, primarily with the Roma have gone very, very, very deep into using analytics. And as you would imagine, a calcio sort of a legend, I don't want to say legend, but someone very old school like Sabatini, he wasn't too thrilled about that. So I think if they could resolve those issues, I think he would return. But I feel like there's very two drastically different scenarios where if Roma have the sort of guaranteed income of a Champions League, you could be a bit riskier. Even if you did hire someone from within the city, a lot of people point to Torino Spirciacchi, who I think would be a good name. I think this past summer he's done phenomenally. He would be a name I wouldn't mind seeing. But again, if they don't qualify for the Champions League, which by the day is looking more like the case, I would like to see them reappoint Sabatini just because he understands the environment. He has had to build a Roma side without Champions League football twice before. He did it in two successive summers. So, and he would be starting with a much better base than what he was when he had to the first two times. So I would like to see him reappointed. As to whether or not that happens, whether he can resolve his problems with Palotta, that remains to be seen. But I feel like the choices out there, they all come with risk. Even Sabatini comes with a risk. But he's the one, I think, who could steady the ship, because I think that's what Roma need more than anything, just someone to steady the ship. And whether we want to believe it or not, the Roma that was in the Champions League semifinal of the Champions League versus Liverpool, I mean, that was Sabatini's Roma. Yeah. That really wasn't Monchi's Roma. I mean, you had Kolarov out there, but I mean, you had Alisson, you had Manolas, you had Nainggolan, Strootman, Dzeko. I mean, that was Sabatini's Roma. So I would like to see him be reappointed.
Yeah, I'm with you. That makes a lot of sense. I know there's the issues with Palotta, but maybe now he looks a lot better in Palotta's eyes after Monchi, who arrived with this big pedigree. than do as well. And then there's the health issue, but I'm with you. I think he'd be a very good hire. So let's let me ask you just one more question on Monchi, because, you know, his legacy, I think, you know, isn't going to be that great at Roma, especially if they don't make the Champions League. But how much do you think the shine of the Zaniolo deal, especially looking how Nainggolan has done at Inter, how much do you think that's going to be part of his legacy? Or do you think ultimately people are going to forget about that and they're going to talk much more about a lot of his other failings?
Yeah, I think people will talk much more about his other failings, and that seems to be the case almost on a daily basis. Yeah, nobody will deny that getting Zaniolo was an absolute masterstroke and a phenomenal piece of business, but he has just done so much more bad than good. It's almost astonishing that, because I'm a glutton for punishment, I looked at one of the teams that Spalletti had in his final season with Roma, and you see names like Rudiger and Strootman, Nainggolan, Manolas, and Emerson Palmieri, and there was just such a great base. Obviously Salah, and just to see the amount of talent that Roma had, and to see what Monchi did to it is very depressing. I think that his legacy, the bad that he did just is so much more than anything he did good, which was bringing in Zaniolo. I thought bringing in Kolarov was good. I don't know how he escapes some of the moves that he did. And David, I'd be curious to hear your opinion. Do you think the manner in which he left Roma and sort of going back to Sevilla with his leg, with his tail between his legs, do you think that kills any chance of him ever getting to a big club again?
It's a good question. Long and short of it, yes, I do. I think people now are going to be very weary, especially seeing what he did at Roma. And look, in a way, I do respect that he left with Di Francesco, that they were kind of tied at the hip. So I respect him for, you know, just leaving for that. But I think he realized that maybe he overextended himself. He needed to be in a situation where he's comfortable. And I know other people have brought up that maybe the thing that made Monchi so great a while back was the scouting and the networking. And so many other clubs have that now, that I think it was proven at Roma that it's like, you know what, Sabatini was essentially doing the same thing before that. So I think maybe more than him returning to Sevilla, it's really that. And I think now just so many people can do what made him famous. So Long and short of it, yeah, I think this is really going to be his level. It's pretty crazy to think, because not that long ago, it wasn't just Arsenal. It was Manchester United and all that. But I think that ship sailed there.
Yeah,
So let's close on something I hope is still optimistic. So last time we had you on, it wasn't that long ago, but we know in Italy with bureaucracy, how quickly things can change. So let me ask you, last time you were very optimistic about the new stadium for Roma. So let me ask you now, in the middle of March, how do you feel about that? You still feel confident this is ultimately going to happen?
Yes, still optimistic. People I talk to at Roma are optimistic as well. We've been hearing it for the past 5, 6, 7 years, but I truly do think that this year, 2019, we will actually see a shovel be put into the ground and the first bits of the construction of the stadium start, which it's been way too long. You mentioned the bureaucracy. The steps Roma had to go through, I think, have been absurd. It's astonishing that, you know, it's 2019 and Italy finally gets foreign investment and they're spurning and they're putting up roadblocks in every way they can. But I do think that construction will begin later this year. I would say November at the earliest, but I am optimistic. And yeah, the stadium, you can attest to it, David. Yeah, you're good with the finance stuff. I just think it's an absolute game changer for Roma. It's what Juve have been able to do since the opening of their stadium. It can't be understated how impressive they've been. So Roma need this more than anything. They really, really do. So I am optimistic. I do think construction will start sooner.
Well, I'm thrilled we closed on something positive on Roma. And look, I think, too, Pallotta overall has done really good work, spent a lot of money. We know the social media team and the stadium. I mean, he's really put a lot of, his legacy in a lot of ways into the stadium. And if it happens, like you said, it's going to be huge for Roma. So, John, always a pleasure to have you on. You're essentially almost the co-host with us. If you enjoy hearing John on Calcioland, you'll love all his work on AS Roma Press. The podcast is terrific. The website has a lot of original content. If you want even more Serie A in your earbuds, definitely check out Serie A Show. John's the host. He has panelists with Nima and Chloe you've heard on our show. It's outstanding. So, John, thanks so much for joining me. I look forward to chatting with you very soon.
Awesome. Thanks for having me again, David.
So that's our episode for the day. Thank you to everyone that sent us a question. We're already working on the next episode of Calcioland. So if you have a question on Serie A, transfers, Champions League, pop culture, journalism, and podcasting, please send us one with the Calcioland hashtag on Twitter. We really appreciate your support. This is a completely free podcast. We rely on you to be co-writers of the show with your questions, but also be the marketing department. Calcioland. If you dig what you hear, please tweet the links to our podcast, tell your followers, tell your friends, and also please leave us a review on iTunes. You hear me mention this a lot, but it really helps the show grow. I think there's nothing better than a review from one of our actual listeners to promote what we do. So thanks for your support, and we look forward to chatting with you again soon.